Hello. It's about 3 minutes to midnight in Limerick in Ireland now, and I'm just getting ready to go to bed. So I thought I'd read you a story just before bedtime. It's from a book that I'm thinking of reading, but haven't read. So I'm just going to read you something from the beginning of the book. It's called The Strangler Vine. The Strangler Vine by M.J. Carter. And it's a story, and it's dedicated to his boys. So let me just start off with the historical note at the beginning. This entire piece of audio will be me reading to you. So settle down, get yourself a cup of coffee, and put your feet up for a few minutes, and I'll take you to another world. This is a historical note at the start of the story. The East India Company was launched in 1600 by a group of British merchants with ambitions to trade with the East. Over the next two centuries, it built up its own private army and gradually gave up its trading interests in favour of taking over and ruling large parts of India, making money out of taxation and out of its monopoly in the opium trade with China. It became a peculiar mixture of private capital and instrument of the British state, and was arguably the world's first multinational. By 1837, the company dominated the subcontinent, controlling much of what is now India, Bangladesh, and Nepal, with Calcutta as its capital. Within these borders, there still existed many independent princely states, however, which struggled to find ways of existing alongside their powerful and hungry neighbour. Okay. Right, so here's the prologue entitled Central India, June 1837. He stumbles out from the mango grove, and at that moment the thick monsoon clouds, which colour the night a dull charcoal grey, shift. A sliver of moonlight shines through when he sees their bright curved knives. Had the clouds not parted, he would have blundered, laughing, straight through the gates, straight on to their blades. As it is, he is in a befuzzled haze and pretty far gone. He has been alternately laughing disgustedly at himself and seething at their crimes, their banality, their complacency. He has been imagining how he will pay them back. Before he even understands what he has seen, an old instinct causes him to throw himself onto the sodden ground and scramble into the shadow of the tall, mud-splattered outer walls. The effort winds him, and he makes his chest hurt, and his knees jar, and he wheezes. The sober part of him tries to quieten his breathing, noting now the soft patter of dripping water, and understanding that he sounds of the monsoon, that the sounds of the monsoon have covered his approach. I've had too much, he thinks, and my bones are too old for such things. He knows they are there for him. He can see two of them standing silent and still behind the gates, gates that have always seemed too imposing for such a modest building. They are barefoot. Their dhotis and turbans dyed or muddied, so they blend into the dark, but the moon lights up their swords and the dark sheen of their young bodies. Another step, and he would now be so much skewered meat. He winces at the coarseness of the phrase and then suppresses the urge to giggle. Awkwardly, he twists his neck to face the wall. Days of heavy rain have penetrated the mortar and worked on cracks and holes. His hand shaking a little, He pulls away a little sand and gravel around one hole until it is large enough for him to see through into the compound. Two lanterns on the grass give out a dim ambient light. Two men he recognizes neither, armed with knives, speak in an intimate tone, too quiet for him to make sense of the words. Another comes on to the veranda, which means they have searched the house. One man's knife is already dark and shiny with blood. The other lifts up something small and human-like and dangles it by its long hairy arms. The watcher starts. A shiver runs through the creature's limp body. He thinks he hears it whimper. The man tosses it up and catches it by its arms. Then, in a swift, practiced, efficient movement, he places his hands round its neck and wrings it. A short, brutal twist, and the other man drives his knife into its chest. The watcher feels an unaccustomed pang of distress. He cannot remember the moment when the monkey parted company with him. It may have been hours ago. The assassin tosses the creature onto the ground and with his comrade strolls over to the gates. The one with the bloody knife speaks to the young guards. It is a Marathi dialect, the watcher knows. He tells them to walk the walls once more. He may be cowering in the shadows. The watcher knows he will never make it to the trees. The sober part of him feels not precisely fear, but rather a sense of failure. They will kill me, and even if they do not find the papers, the truth will be lost. I will die, and my grave will be unmarked, and no one will know, and I will be forgotten. That thought is almost the worst. As if in a dream, he watches the gate guard pad towards him, a knife at the ready in one hand, a long scarf in the other. The scarf, how appropriate, he thinks. Some 15 yards from him, the guard crouches down and feels the ground where he cast himself onto the mud. He beckons a second guard. The watcher shrinks into the shadow of the wall, his mouth as dry as he can remember. Step by step, they draw closer to him, like some absurd parlour game. As they cover the last few yards, he finds that, without realising it, he has raised his arms in supplication and is mildly disgusted by the intense desire he suddenly feels to live. Thus ends the beginning, the prologue, set in central India in 1837. Chapter 1 is set in Calcutta in September 1837. Now the question is, shall I read this book, or shall I just leave it in a pile? What do I know about the author already? I know almost nothing. Well, I do know nothing. This book was first published in 2014. And we'll see. What do you think? Should I read it? Would you like to hear more from it? Has it captured your fancy? It's published by Penguin Fig Tree. Penguin Fig Tree. And there we are. The ISBN number, in case you'd like to locate the book, is 978-0261-146-231. It's Paul O'Mahony. Have a very, very good night. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.